I didn't even ask her name, Leto thought, as he rolled himself onto the new cart in the depression of his small audience room. It took a few moments of reflection to recall the new sub-Bashar's name, Kiowemo. The promotion would have to be reaffirmed. He lodged a mental reminder to do this personally. The fish speakers, all of them, would have to learn immediately how much he valued Hui Nori. Not that there could be much doubt after tonight. He made his prescient scan then and dispatched messengers to his rampaging fish speakers. By then the damage had been done, corpses all over on, some face dancers and some only suspected face dancers. And many have seen me kill, he thought. While he waited for Hui's arrival, he reviewed what had just happened. This had not been a typical Telaxu attack, but the previous attack on the road to On fitted into a new pattern, all of it pointing at a single mind with lethal purpose. I could have died out there, he thought. That began to explain why he had not anticipated this attack, but there was a deeper reason. Leto could see that reason rising into his awareness, a summation of all the clues. What human knew the God Emperor best? What human possessed a secret place from which to conspire? Malki. Leto summoned a guard and told her to ask if the Reverend Mother Antioch had yet left Arrakis. The guard returned in a moment to report. Antioch is still in her quarters. The commander of the fish speaker guard there says they have not come under attack.
Send word to Antioch, Leto said. Ask if she now understands why I put her delegation in quarters at a distance from me. Then tell her that while she is on Ix, she must locate Malki. She is to report that location to our local garrison on Ix.
Malki, the former Ixian ambassador?
The same. He is not to remain alive and free. You will inform our garrison commander on Ix that she is to make close liaison with Antioch, providing every necessary assistance. Malki is to be brought here to me or executed, whichever our commander finds necessary.
The guard messenger nodded, shadows lurching around her features where she stood in the ring of light around Leto's face. She did not ask for a repetition of the orders. Each of his close guards had been trained as a human recorder. They could repeat Leto's words exactly, even the intonations, and would never forget what they had heard him say. When the messenger had gone, Leto sent a private signal of inquiry and, within seconds, had a response from Nayla. The Ixian device within his cart reproduced a non-identifiable version of her voice, a flatly metallic recital for his ears alone. Yes, Siona was at the Citadel. No, Siona had not contacted her rebel companions.
No, she does not yet know that I am here observing her.
The attack on the embassy? That had been by a splinter group called the Tlelaxu Contact Element. Leto allowed himself a mental sigh. Rebels always gave their groups such pretentious labels.
Any survivors? He asked.
No known survivors.
Leto found it amusing that, while the metallic voice provided no emotional tones, his memory supplied them.
You will make contact with Siona, he said. Reveal that you are a fish speaker. Tell her you did not reveal this earlier because you knew she would not trust you and because you feared exposure since you are quite alone among fish speakers in your allegiance to Siona. Reaffirm your oath to her. Tell her that you swear, by all that you hold holy, to obey Siona in anything. If she commands it, you will do it. All of this is truth, as you well know.
Yes, Lord.
Memory supplied the fanatic emphasis in Nayla's response. She would obey.
If possible, provide opportunities for Siona and Duncan Idaho to be alone together, he said.
Yes, Lord.
Let propinquity take its usual course, he thought.
He broke contact with Nayla, thought for a moment, then sent for the commander of his plaza forces. The Bashar arrived presently, her dark uniform stained and dusty, evidence of gore still on her boots. She was a tall, bone-thin woman with age lines which gave her aquiline features an air of powerful dignity. Leto recalled her troop name, Ilio, which meant dependable in old Fremen. He called her, however, by her matronymic, Nishe. daughter of Shay, which set a tone of subtle intimacy for this meeting.
Rest yourself on a cushion, Nishe, he said. You have been working hard.
Thank you, Lord.
She sank onto the red cushion which Hui had used. Leto noted the fatigue lines around Nishe's mouth, but her eyes remained alert. She stared up at him, eager to hear his words.
Matters are once more tranquil in my city.
He made it not quite a question, leaving the interpretation to Nishe.
Tranquil, but not good, Lord.
He glanced at the gore on her boots.
The street in front of the Ixion embassy?
It is being cleansed, Lord. Repairs already are underway.
The plaza?
By morning, it will appear as it has always appeared.
Her gaze remained steady on his face. Both of them knew he had not yet reached the nubbin of this interview, but Leto now identified a thing lurking within Nishe's expression.
Pride in her lord.
For the first time, she had seen the God Emperor kill. The seeds of a terrible dependency had been planted.
If disaster threatens, my lord will come.
That was how it appeared in her eyes. She would no longer act with complete independence, taking her power from the God Emperor and being personally responsible for the use of that power. There was something possessive in her expression. A terrible death machine waited in the wings, available at her summons. Leto did not like what he saw, but the damage had been done. Any remedies would require slow and subtle pressures.
Where did the attackers get laser guns? He asked.
From our own stores, Lord. The Arsenal Guard has been replaced.
Replaced.
It was a euphemism with a certain nicety. Errant fish speakers were isolated and reserved until Leto found a problem which required death commandos. They would die gladly, of course, believing that thus they expiated their sin, and even the rumor that such berserkers had been dispatched could quiet a trouble spot.
The arsenal was breached by explosives? He asked.
Stealth and explosives, Lord. The Arsenal Guard was careless.
The source of the explosives?
Some of Nishe's fatigue was visible in her shrug. Leto could only agree. He knew he could search out and identify those sources, but it would serve little purpose. Resourceful people could always find the ingredients for homemade explosives. Common things, such as sugar and bleaches, quite ordinary oils and innocent fertilizers, plastics and solvents and extracts from the dirt beneath a manure pile. The list was virtually endless, growing with each addition to human experience and knowledge. Even a society such as the one he had created, one which tried to limit the admixture of technology and new ideas, had no real hope of totally eliminating dangerously violent small weapons. The whole idea of controlling such things was chimera, a dangerous and distracting myth. The key was to limit the desire for violence. In that respect, this night had been a disaster.
So much new injustice, he thought.
As though she read his thought, Nishe sighed.
Of course. Fish speakers were trained from childhood to avoid injustice wherever possible. We must see to the survivors in the populace, he said. See to it that their needs are met. They must be brought to the realization that the Tleilaxu were to blame.
Nishe nodded. She had not reached Bashar rank while remaining ignorant of the drill. By now she believed it. Merely by hearing Leto say it, she believed in the Tleilaxu guilt, and there was a certain practicality in her understanding. She knew why they did not slay all of the Tleilaxu. You do not eliminate every scapegoat.
And we must provide a distraction, Leto said. Luckily, there may be one ready at hand. I will send word to you after conferring with the Lady Hui Nori.
The Ixion ambassador, Lord? Is she not implicated in—
She is entirely guiltless, he said.
He saw belief settle into Nishe's features, a ready-made plastic underlayment which could lock her jaw and glaze her eyes.
Even Nishe.
He knew the reasons because he had created those reasons, but sometimes he felt a bit awed by his creation.
I hear the Lady Hui arriving in my anteroom, he said. Send her in as you leave. And Nishe.
She already was on her feet, but she stood expectantly silent.
Tonight I have elevated Kiawemo to sub-basha, he said. See that it is made official. As for yourself, I am pleased. Ask and you shall receive.
He saw the formula send a wave of pleasure through Niche, but she tempered it immediately, proving once more her worth to him.
I shall test Kiwemu, Lord, she said. If she suits, I may take a holiday. I have not seen my family on Seleucus Secundus for many years.
At a time of your own choosing, he said.
And he thought, Seleucus Secundus. Of course. That one reference to her origins reminded him of who she resembled. Hark Aladar. She has Corino blood. We are closer relatives than I had thought.
My lord is generous, she said.
She left him then, a new spring in her stride. He heard her voice in the anteroom.
Lady Hui, our lord will see you now.
Hui entered, back lighted and framed in the archway for a moment, hesitancy in her step until her eyes adjusted to the inner chamber. She came like a moth to the brightness around Leto's face, looking away only to seek along his shadowy length for signs of injury. He knew that no such sign was visible, but there were still aches and interior tremblings. His eyes detected a slight limp, Hui favoring her right leg, but a long gown of jade green concealed the injury. She stopped at the edge of the declivity which held his cart, looking directly into his eyes.
They said you were wounded, Hui. Are you in pain?
A cut on my leg below the knee, Lord. A small piece of masonry from the explosion. Your fish speakers treated it with a salve which removed the pain. Lord, I feared for you.
And I feared for you, gentle Hui.
Except for that first explosion, I was not in danger, Lord. They rushed me into a room deep beneath the embassy.
So she did not see my performance, he thought. I can be thankful for that. I sent for you to ask your forgiveness, he said.
She sank onto a golden cushion.
What is there to forgive, Lord? You are not the reason for—
I am being tested, Hui.
You?
There are those who wish to know the depths of my concern for the safety of Hui Nori.
She pointed upward.
That was because of me?
Because of us.
Oh. But who?
You have agreed to wed me, Hui. And I—
He raised a hand to silence her as she started to speak. Antioch has told us what you revealed to her.
But this did not originate with Antioch.
Then who is—
The who is not important. It is important that you reconsider. I must give you this opportunity to change your mind.
She lowered her gaze.
How sweet her features are,
he thought. It was possible for him to create only in his imagination an entire human lifetime with Hui. Enough examples lay in the welter of his memories upon which to build a fantasy of wedded life. It gathered nuances in his fancy, small details of mutual experience, a touch, a kiss, all of the sweet sharings upon which arose something of painful beauty. He ached with it, a pain far deeper than the physical reminders of his violence at the embassy. Hui lifted her chin and looked into his eyes. He saw there a compassionate longing to help him.
But how else may I serve you, Lord?
He reminded himself that she was a primate, while he no longer was fully primate. The differences grew deeper by the minute. The ache remained within him. Hui was an inescapable reality, something so basic that no word could ever fully express it. The ache within him was almost more than he could bear.
I love you, Hui. I love you as a man loves a woman.
But it cannot be.
That will never be.
Tears flowed from her eyes.
Should I leave? Should I return to Ix?
They would only hurt you, trying to find out what went wrong with their plan.
She has seen my pain, he thought. She knows the futility and frustration. What will she do?
She will not lie. She will not say she returns my love as a woman to a man. She recognizes the futility, and she knows her own feelings for me. Compassion, awe, a questioning which ignores fear.
Then I will stay, she said. We will take such pleasure as we can from being together. I think it is best that we do this. If it means we should wed, so be it.
Then I must share knowledge with you which I have shared with no other person, he said. But it will give you a power over me which—
Do not do this, Lord.
What if someone forced me to?
You will never again leave my household. My quarters here, the citadel, the safe places of the Sarir, these will be your home.
As you will.
How gentle and open her quiet acceptance, he thought. The aching pulse within him had to be calmed. In itself, it was a danger to him and to the Golden Path. Those clever Ixians.
Malky had seen how the All-Powerful were forced to contend with a constant siren song, the will to self-delight.
Constant awareness of the power in your slightest whim.
Hui took his silence to be uncertainty.
Will we wed, Lord?
Yes.
Should anything be done about the Tleilaxu stories which—
Nothing.
She stared at him, remembering their earlier conversation.
The seeds of dissolution were being planted.
It is my fear, Lord, that I will weaken you, she said.
Then you must find ways to strengthen me.
Can it strengthen you if we diminish belief in the Lord Leto?
He heard a hint of Malky in her voice, that measured weighing which had made him so revoltingly charming.
We never completely escape the teachers of our childhood. Your question begs the answer, he said. Many will continue to worship according to my design. Others will believe the lies.
Lord, would you ask me to lie for you?
Of course not. But I will ask you to remain silent when you might wish to speak.
But if they revile?
You will not protest.
Once more, tears flowed down her cheeks. Leto longed to touch them, but they were water. Painful water.
It must be done this way, he said.
Will you explain it to me, Lord?
When I am gone, they must call me Shaitan, the Emperor of Gehenna. The wheel must turn and turn and turn along the Golden Path.
Lord, could the anger not be directed at me alone? I would not—
No. The Ixians made you much more perfectly than they thought. I truly love you. I cannot help it.
I do not wish to cause you pain.
The words were wrenched from her.
What's done is done. Do not mourn it.
Help me to understand.
The hate which will blossom after I am gone, that too will fade into the inevitable past. A long time will pass. Then, on a far distant day, my journals will be found.
Journals?
She was shaken by the seeming shift of subject.
My chronicle of my time, my arguments, the apologia. Copies exist and scattered fragments will survive, some in distorted form, but the original journals will wait and wait and wait. I have hidden them well.
And when they are discovered?
People will learn that I was something quite different from what they supposed.
Her voice came in a trembling hush.
I already know what they will learn.
Yes, my darling Hui. I think you do.
You are neither devil nor god, but something never seen before and never to be seen again because your presence removes the need.
She brushed tears from her cheeks.
Hui, do you realize how dangerous you are?
Alarm showed in her expression, the tensing of her arms.
You have the makings of a saint, he said. Do you understand how painful it can be to find a saint in the wrong place and the wrong time?
She shook her head.
People have to be prepared for saints, he said. Otherwise they simply become followers, supplicants, beggars and weakened sycophants forever in the shadow of the saint. People are destroyed by this because it nurtures only weakness.
After a moment of thought, she nodded, then,
will there be saints when you are gone?
That's the purpose of my golden path.
Moneo's daughter, Siona, will she?
For now she is only a rebel. As to sainthood, we will let her decide. Perhaps she will only do what she was bred to do.
What is that, Lord?
Stop calling me Lord, he said. We will be worm and wife. Call me Leto if you wish. Lord interferes.
Yes, Lord. Leto. But what is—
Siona was bred to rule. There is danger in such breeding. When you rule, you gain knowledge of power. This can lead into impetuous irresponsibility, into painful excesses, and that can lead to the terrible destroyer, wild hedonism.
Siona would...
All we know about Siona is that she can remain dedicated to a particular performance, to the pattern which fills her senses. She is necessarily an aristocrat, but aristocracy looks mostly to the past. That's a failure. You don't see much of my path unless you are Janus, looking simultaneously backward and forward.
Janus? Oh yes, the god with the two opposed faces.
She wet her lips with her tongue.
Are you Janus, Leto?
I am Janus magnified a billionfold, and I am also something less. I have been, for example, what my administrators admire most, the decision-maker whose every decision can be made to work.
But if you fail them?
They will turn against me, yes.
Will Siona replace you if...
Ah, what an enormous if. You observe that Siona threatens my person. However, she does not threaten the golden path. There is also the fact that my fish speakers have a certain attachment to the Duncan.
Siona seems so young.
And I am her favorite poseur, the sham who holds power under false pretenses, never consulting the needs of his people.
Could I not talk to her and...
No. You must never try to persuade Siona of anything. Promise me, Hui.
If you ask it, of course. But I...
All gods have this problem, Hui. In the perception of deeper needs, I must often ignore immediate ones. Not addressing immediate needs is an offense to the young.
Could you not reason with her and...
Never attempt to reason with people who know they are right.
But when you know they are wrong...
Do you believe in me?
Yes.
And if someone tried to convince you that I am the greatest evil of all time,
I would become very angry. I would...
She broke off.
Reason is valuable, he said, only when it performs against the wordless physical background of the universe.
Her brows drew together in thought. It fascinated Leto to sense the arousal of her awareness.
Ah.
She breathed the word.
No reasoning creature will ever again be able to deny the Leto experience, he said. I see your understanding begin. Beginnings. They are what life is all about.
She nodded. No arguments, he thought. When she sees the tracks, she follows them to find where they will lead.
As long as there is life, every ending is a beginning, he said, and I would save humankind even from itself.
Again she nodded. The tracks still led onward.
This is why no death in the perpetuation of humankind can be a complete failure, he said. This is why a birth touches us so deeply. This is why the most tragic death is the death of a youth.
Does Ix still threaten your golden path? I've always known they conspired in something evil.
They conspire. Hui does not hear the inner message of her own words. She has no need to hear it.
He stared at her, full of the marvel that was Hui. She possessed a form of honesty which some would call naive, but which Leto recognized as merely non-self-conscious. The honesty was not her core. It was Hui herself.
Then I will arrange a performance in the plaza tomorrow, Leto said. It will be a performance of the surviving face dancers. Afterward, our betrothal will be announced.
Let there be no doubt that I am the assemblage of our ancestors, the arena in which they exercise my moments. They are my cells, and I am their body. This is the Favrashi of which I speak, the soul, the collective unconscious, the source of archetypes, the repository of all trauma and joy. I am the choice of their awakening. My samadhi is their samadhi. Their experiences are mine. Their knowledge distilled is my inheritance. Those billions are my one. the stolen journals.
The face dancer performance occupied almost 2 hours of the morning, and afterward came the announcement which sent shockwaves through the festival city.
It has been centuries since he took a bride. More than 1,000 years, my dear.
The trooping of the fish speakers had been brief. They cheered him loudly, but they were disturbed.
You are my only brides, he had said.
Was that not the meaning of Sihanouk?
Leto thought the face dancers performed well, despite their obvious terror. Garments had been found in the depths of a Fremen museum, hooded black robes with white cord belts, spread-winged green hawks appliqued across the shoulders at the back, uniforms of Muad'Dib's itinerant priests. The face dancers had put on dark, seamed faces with these robes, and performed a dance which told how Muad'Dib's legions had spread their religion through the empire. Hui, wearing a brilliant silver dress with a green jade necklace, sat beside Leto on the royal cart throughout the ritual. Once she leaned close to his face and asked,
Is that not a parody?
To me, perhaps.
Do the face dancers know?
They suspect.
Then they are not as frightened as they appear.
Oh, yes, they are frightened. It's just that they are braver than most people expect them to be.
Bravery can be so foolish, she whispered.
And vice versa.
She had favored him with a measuring stare before returning her attention to the performance. Almost 200 face dancers had survived unscathed. All of them had been pressed into the dance. The intricate weavings and posturings could fascinate the eye. It was possible to watch them and, for a time, forget the bloody preliminaries to this day. Leto remembered this as he lay alone in his small reception room shortly before noon when Moneo arrived. Moneo had seen the Reverend Mother Antioch onto a guild lighter, had conferred with the fish speaker command about the previous night's violence, had made a quick flight to the citadel and back to make sure Siona was under a secure watch and that she had not been implicated in the embassy attack. He had returned to On just after the betrothal announcement, having had no previous warning. Moneo was furious. Leto had never seen him this angry. He stormed into the room and stopped only 2 meters from Leto's face.
Now that Leilaxu lies will be believed, he said.
Leto responded in a reasoned tone.
How persistent it is, this demand that our gods be perfect. The Greeks were much more reasonable about such things.
Where is she?
Moneo demanded.
Where is this?
Hui is resting. It was a difficult night and a long morning. I want her well rested when we return to the citadel this evening.
How did she work this? Moneo demanded.
Really, Moneo, have you lost all sense of caution?
I am concerned about you. Have you any idea what they're saying in the city?
I'm fully aware of the stories.
What are you doing?
You know, Moneo, I think that only the old pantheists had the right idea about deities. Mortal foibles in immortal guise.
Moneo raised both arms to the heavens.
I saw the looks on their faces.
He lowered his arms.
It'll be all over the empire within 2 weeks.
Surely it'll take longer than that.
If your enemies needed one thing to bring them all together.
The defiling of the god is an ancient human tradition, Moneo. Why should I be an exception?
Moneo tried to speak, found he could not utter a word. He stamped down along the edge of the pit which held Leto's cart, stamped back and resumed his former position, glaring into Leto's face.
If I am to help you, I need an explanation,
Moneo said.
Why are you doing this?
Emotions.
Moneo's mouth formed the word without speaking it.
They have come over me just when I thought them gone forever, Leto said. How sweet these last few sips of humanity are.
With Hui? But you surely cannot.
Memories of emotions are never enough, Moneo.
Are you telling me that you are indulging yourself in a...
Indulgence? Certainly not. But the tripod upon which eternity swings is composed of flesh and thought and emotion. I felt that I had been reduced to flesh and thought.
She has worked some kind of witchery,
Moneo accused.
Of course she has. And how grateful I am for it. If we deny the need for thought, Moneo, as some do, we lose the powers of reflection. We cannot define what our senses report. If we deny the flesh, we unwheel the vehicle which bears us, but if we deny emotion, we lose all touch with our internal universe. It was emotions which I missed the most.
I insist, Lord, that you—
You are making me angry, Moneo. That is an emotion.
Leto saw Moneo's frustrated fury cool, quenched like a hot iron plunged into icy water. There was still some steam in him, though.
I care not for myself, Lord. My concern is mostly for you, and you know this.
Leto spoke softly.
It is your emotion, Moneo, and I hold it dear.
Moneo inhaled a deep, trembling breath. He had never before seen the God Emperor in this mood, reflecting this emotion. Leto appeared both elated and resigned, if Moneo were reading it correctly. One could not be certain.
That which makes life sweet for the living, Leto said, that which makes life warm and filled with beauty, that is what I would preserve, even though it were denied to me.
Then this Hui Nori—
She makes me recall the Butlerian jihad in a poignant way. She is the antithesis of all that's mechanical and non-human. How odd it is, Moneo, that the Ixians of all people should produce this one person who so perfectly embodies those qualities which I hold most dear.
I do not understand your reference to the Butlerian jihad, Lord. Machines that think have no place in—
The target of the jihad was a machine attitude as much as the machines, Leto said. Humans had set those machines to usurp our sense of beauty, our necessary selfdom out of which we make living judgments. Naturally, the machines were destroyed.
Lord, I still resent the fact that you welcome this—
Moneo, Qui reassures me merely by her presence. For the first time in centuries, I am not lonely unless she is away from my side. If I had no other proof of the emotion, this would serve.
Moneo fell silent, obviously touched by Leto's evocation of loneliness. Surely Moneo could understand the absence of the intimate sharing in love. His expression betrayed as much. For the first time in a long while, Leto noted how much Moneo had aged.
It happens so suddenly to them, Leto thought.
It made Leto deeply aware of how much he cared for Moneo.
I should not let attachments happen to me. But I cannot help it, especially now that Hui is here.
They will laugh at you and make obscene jests,
Moneo said.
That is a good thing.
How can it be good?
This is something new. Our task has always been to bring the new into balance and, with it, modify behavior while not suppressing survival.
Even so, how can you welcome this?
The making of obscenities, Leto asked. What is the opposite of obscenity?
Moneo's eyes went wide with a sudden questioning awareness. He had seen the action of many polarities, the thing made known by its opposite.
The thing stands out against a background which defines it, Leto thought. Surely Moneo will see this.
It's too dangerous,
Moneo said.
The ultimate verdict of conservatism.
Moneo was not convinced. A deep sigh racked him.
I must remember not to take away their doubts, Leto thought. That's how I failed my fish speakers in the plaza. The Ixians are holding on to the ragged end of human doubts. Hui is the evidence of that.
A disturbance sounded in the anteroom. Leto sealed the portal against impetuous intrusions.
My Duncan has come, he said.
He's probably heard about your wedding plans.
Probably.
Leto watched Moneo wrestle with doubts, his thoughts utterly transparent. In that moment, Moneo fit so precisely into his human niche that Leto wanted to hug him.
He has the full spectrum. Doubt to trust, love to hate, everything. All of those dear qualities which come to fruition in the warmth of emotion, in the willingness to spend yourself on life.
Why is Hui accepting this?
Moneo asked. Leto smiled.
Moneo cannot doubt me. He must doubt others.
I admit it is not a conventional union. She is a primate, and I no longer am fully primate.
Again Moneo wrestled with things he could only feel and not express. Watching Moneo, Leto felt the flow of an observational awareness, a thought process which occurred so rarely but with such vivid implication when it did occur that Leto did not stir lest he caused a ripple in the flow. The primate thinks, and by thinking survives. Beneath his thinking is a thing which came with his cells. It is the current of human concerns for the species. Sometimes they cover it up, wall it off, and hide it behind thick barriers, but I have deliberately sensitized Moneo to these workings of his innermost self. He follows me because he believes I hold the best course for human survival. He knows there is a cellular awareness. It is what I find when I scan the golden path. This is humanity, and both of us agree. It must endure.
Where, when, and how will the wedding ceremony be conducted?
Moneo asked. Not why, Leto noted. Moneo no longer sought to understand the why. He had returned to safe ground. He was the major domo, the director of the God Emperor's household, the first minister. He has names and verbs and modifiers with which he can perform. The words will work for him in their usual ways. Moneo may never glimpse the transcendental potential of his words, but he well understands their everyday, mundane uses.
What of my question? Moneo pressed.
Leto blinked at him, thinking, I, on the other hand, feel that words are mostly useful if they open for me a glimpse of attractive and undiscovered places. But the use of words is so little understood by a civilization which still believes unquestioningly in a mechanical universe of absolute cause and effect, obviously reducible to one single root cause and one primary seminal effect.
How like a limpet the exscient Lelaxu fallacy clings to human affairs, Leto said.
Lord, it disturbs me deeply when you don't pay attention.
But I do pay attention, Moneo.
Not to me.
Even to you.
Your attention wanders, Lord. You do not have to conceal that from me. I would betray myself before I would betray you.
You think I'm wool-gathering?
What gathering, Lord?
Moneo had never questioned this word earlier. But now... Leto explained the illusion, thinking, how ancient. The looms and shuttles clicked in Leto's memory. Animal fur to human garments, huntsman to herdsman. The long steps up the ladder of awareness, and now they must make another long step, longer even than the ancient ones.
You indulge in idle thoughts,
Moneo accused.
I have time for idle thoughts. That's one of the most interesting things about my existence as a singular multitude.
But, Lord, there are matters which demand our...
You'd be surprised what comes of idle thinking, Moneo. I've never minded spending an entire day on things a human would not bother with for 1 minute. Why not? With my life expectancy of some 4,000 years, what's one day more or less? How much time does one human life count? 1,000,000 minutes? I've already experienced almost that many days.
Moneo stood frozen in silence, diminished by this comparison. He felt his own lifetime reduced to a mote in Leto's eye. The source of the illusion did not escape him.
Words, words, words.
Moneo thought.
Words are often almost useless in sentient affairs, Leto said.
Moneo held his breathing to a shallow minimum.
The Lord can read thoughts.
Throughout our history, Leto said, the most potent use of words has been to round out some transcendental event, giving that event a place in the accepted chronicles, explaining the event in such a way that ever afterward we can use those words and say, this is what it meant.
Moneo felt beaten down by these words, terrified by unspoken things they might make him think.
That's how events get lost in history, Leto said.
After a long silence, Moneo ventured,
You have not answered my question, Lord. The wedding?
How tired he sounds, Leto thought. How utterly defeated.
Leto spoke briskly.
I have never needed your good offices more. The wedding must be managed with utmost care. It must have the precision of which only you are capable.
Where, Lord?
A bit more life in his voice. At Tabor village in the Sarir.
When?
I leave the date to you. Announce it when all things are arranged.
And the ceremony itself?
I will conduct it.
Will you need assistance, Lord? Artifacts of any kind?
The trappings of ritual?
Any particular thing which I may not—
We will not need much for our little charade.
Lord, I beg of you, please—
You will stand beside the bride and give her in marriage, Leto said. We will use the old Fremen ritual.
We will need water rings, then,
Moneo said.
Yes, I will use Gani's water rings.
And who will attend, Lord?
Only a fish-speaker guard and the aristocracy.
Moneo stared at Leto's face.
What does my lord mean by aristocracy?
You, your family, the household entourage, the courtiers of the citadel.
My fam?
Moneo swallowed.
Do you include Siona?
If she survives the test.
But
is she not family?
Of course, my lord. She is Atreides, and—
Then by all means include Siona.
Moneo brought a tiny memcorder from his pocket, a dull, black, Ixian artifact whose existence crowded the prescriptions of the Butlerian Jihad. A soft smile touched Leto's lips. Moneo knew his duties and would now perform them. The clamor of Duncan, Idaho outside the portal grew more strident, but Moneo ignored the sound.
Moneo knows the price of his privileges, Leto thought. It is another kind of marriage, the marriage of privilege and duty. It is the aristocrat's explanation and his excuse.
Moneo finished his note-taking.
A few details, Lord,
Moneo said.
Will there be some special garb for Hui?
The still suit and robe of a Fremen bride, real ones.
A jewelry or other baubles?
Leto's gaze locked on Moneo's fingers, scrabbling over the tiny recorder, seeing there a dissolution.
Leadership, courage, a sense of knowledge and order. Moneo has these in abundance. They surround him like a holy aura, but they conceal from all eyes except mine the rot which eats from within. It is inevitable. Were I gone, it would be visible to everyone.
Lord,
Moneo pressed,
are you wool-gathering?
Ah, he likes that word. That is all, Leto said. Only the robe, the still suit, and the water rings.
Moneo bowed and turned away.
He is looking ahead now, Leto thought. But even this new thing will pass. He will turn toward the past once more. And I had such high hopes for him once. Well, perhaps Siona.
Make no heroes, my father said. The Voice of Ganema, from the Oral History.
Just by the way Idaho strode across the small chamber, his loud demands for audience now gratified, Leto could see an important transformation in the Gola. It was a thing repeated so many times that it had become deeply familiar to Leto. The Duncan had not even exchanged words of greeting with the departing Moneo. It all fitted into the pattern. How boring that pattern had become. Leto had a name for this transformation of the Duncans. He called it the Since Syndrome. The Golas often nurtured suspicions about the secret things which might have been developed across the centuries of oblivion since they last knew awareness. What had people been doing all that time? Why could they possibly want me, this relic from their past? No ego could overcome such doubts forever, especially in a doubting man. One of the Golas had accused Leto,
You put things in my body, things I know nothing about. These things in my body tell you everything I'm doing. You spy on me everywhere.
Another had charged him with possessing a manipulative machine which makes us want to do whatever you want. Once it started, the Since Syndrome could never be entirely eliminated. It could be checked, even diverted, but the dormant seed might sprout at the slightest provocation. Idaho stopped where Moneo had stood, and there was a veiled look of non-specific suspicions in his eyes, in the set of his shoulders. Leto allowed the situation to simmer, bringing the condition to a head. Idaho locked gazes with him, then broke away to dart his glances around the room. Leto recognized the manner behind the gaze.
The Duncans never forget.
As he studied the room using the sightful ways he had been taught centuries before by the Lady Jessica and the Mentat Thufir Hawat, Idaho began to feel a giddy sense of dislocation. He thought the room rejected him.
each thing, the soft cushions, big, bulbous things in gold, green, and a red that was almost purple, the Fremen rugs, each a museum piece, lapping over each other in thick piles around Leto's pit, the false sunlight of Ixion glow globes, light which enveloped the Emperor's face in dry warmth, making the shadows around it deeper and more mysterious. The smell of spice tea somewhere nearby, and that rich melange odor which radiated from the worm body. Idaho felt that too much had happened to him too fast since the Tleilaxu had abandoned him to the mercies of Luli and Friend in that featureless prison cell room.
Too much. Too much. Am I really here? He wondered. Is this me? What are these thoughts that I think?
He stared at Leto's quiescent body, the shadowy and enormous mass which lay so silently there on its cart within the pit. The very quietness of that fleshly mass only suggested mysterious energies, terrible energies which might be unleashed in ways nobody could anticipate. Idaho had heard the stories about the fight at the Ixion embassy, but the fish speaker accounts had an aura of miraculous visitation about them, which obscured the physical data.
He flew down from above them and executed a terrible slaughter among the sinners.
How did he do that? Idaho had asked.
He was an angry god, his informant had said.
Angry, Idaho thought. Was it because of the threat to Hui? The stories he had heard. None were believable. Hui wedded to this gross... It was not possible. Not the lovely Hui, the Hui of gentle delicacy.
He is playing some terrible game, testing us. Testing us.
There was no honest reality in these times, no peace except in the presence of Hui. All else was insanity. As he returned his attention to Leto's face, that silently waiting Atreides face, the sense of dislocation grew stronger in Idaho. He began to wonder if, by a slight increase in mental effort along some strange new pathway, he might break through ghostly barriers to remember all of the experiences of the other Gola Idahos.
What did they think when they entered this room? Did they feel this dislocation, this rejection? Just a little extra effort.
He felt dizzy and wondered if he were going to faint.
Is something wrong, Duncan?
It was Leto's most reasonable and calming tone.
It's not real, Idaho said. I don't belong here.
Leto chose to misunderstand.
But my guard tells me you came here of your own accord, that you flew back from the Citadel and demanded an immediate audience.
I mean here, now, in this time.
But I need you.
For what?
Look around you, Duncan. The ways you can help me are so numerous that you could not do them all.
But your women won't let me fight. Every time I want to go where...
Do you question that you're more valuable alive than dead?
Leto made a clucking sound. Then,
use your wits, Duncan. That's what I value.
And my sperm. You value that.
Your sperm is your own to put where you wish.
I will not leave a widow and orphans behind me the way...
Duncan... I've said the choice is yours.
Idaho swallowed, then.
You've committed a crime against us, Leto. Against all of us. The Golas you resurrect without ever asking us if that's what we want.
This was a new turn in Duncan thinking. Leto peered at Idaho with renewed interest.
What crime?
Oh, I've heard you spouting your deep thoughts, Idaho accused.
He hooked a thumb over his shoulder, pointing at the room's entrance.
Did you know you could be heard out there in the anteroom?
When I wish to be heard, yes. But only my journals hear it all. I would like to know the nature of my crime, though.
There's a time later. A time when you're alive. A time when you're supposed to be alive. It can have a magic, that time, while you're living it. You know you're never going to see a time like that again.
Leto blinked. Touched by the Duncan's distress. The words were evocative. Idaho raised both hands, palms up to chest height, a beggar asking for something he knew he could not receive.
Then, One day you wake up and you remember dying, and you remember the axolotl tank and the Tleilaxu nastiness which awakened you, and it's supposed to start all over again. But it doesn't. It never does, Leto. That's a crime.
I have taken away the magic?
Yes.
Idaho dropped his hands to his sides and clenched them into fists. He felt that he stood alone in the path of a mill-race tide which would overwhelm him at his slightest relaxation.
And what of my time? Leto thought. This too will never happen again. But the Duncan would not understand the difference. What brought you rushing back to the Citadel? Leto asked.
Idaho took a deep breath, then...
Is it true? You're to be married?
That's correct.
To this Hui Nori, the Ixion ambassador?
True.
Idaho darted a quick glance along Leto's supine length.
They always look for genitalia, Leto thought. Perhaps I should have something made, a gross protuberance to shock them.
He choked back the small burst of amusement which threatened to erupt from his throat.
Another emotion amplified. Thank you, Hui. Thank you, Ixions.
Idaho shook his head.
But you...
There are strong elements to a marriage other than sex, Leto said. Will we have children of our flesh? No. But the effects of this union will be profound.
I listened while you were talking to Moneo, Idaho said. I thought it must be some kind of joke.
A careful Duncan.
Do you love her?
More deeply than any man ever loved a woman.
Well, what about her? Does she...
She feels a compelling passion, a need to share with me, to give whatever she can give. It is her nature.
Idaho suppressed a feeling of revulsion.
Moneo's right. They'll believe the Tleilaxu stories.
That is one of the profound effects.
And you still want me to mate with Siona?
You know my wishes. I leave the choice to you.
Who's that Naylor woman?
You've met Naylor. Good.
She and Siona act like sisters. That big hunk. What's going on there, Leto?
What would you want to go on? And what does it matter?
I've never met such a brute. She reminds me of Beast Raban. You'd never know she was female if she didn't...
You have met her before, Leto said. You knew her as friend.
Idaho stared at him in quick silence, the silence of a burrowing creature who senses the hawk.
Then you trust her, Idaho said.
Trust? What is trust? The moment arrives, Leto thought.
He could see it shaping in Idaho's thoughts.
Trust is what goes with a pledge of loyalty, Idaho said.
Such as the trust between you and me? Leto asked.
A bitter smile touched Idaho's lips.
So that's what you're doing with Hui Nori? A marriage? A pledge?
We and I already have trust for each other.
Do you trust me, Leto?
If I cannot trust Duncan Idaho, I cannot trust anyone.
And if I can't trust you,
then I pity you.
Idaho took this as almost a physical shock. His eyes were wide with unspoken demands. He wanted to trust. He wanted the magic which would never come again. Idaho indicated his thoughts were taking off in an odd tangent then.
Can they hear us out in the anteroom? He asked.
No. But my journal's here.
Moneo was furious. Anyone could see it. But he went away like a docile lamb.
Moneo is an aristocrat. He is married to duty, to responsibilities. When he is reminded of these things, his anger vanishes.
So that's how you control him,
Idaho said.
He controls himself,
Leto said, remembering how Moneo had glanced up from the note-taking, not for reassurances, but to prompt his sense of duty.
No,
Idaho said. He doesn't control himself.
You do it.
Moneo has locked himself into his past. I did not do that.
But he's an aristocrat, an Atreides.
Leto recalled Moneo's aging features, thinking how inevitable it was that the aristocrat would refuse his final duty, which was to step aside and vanish into history. He would have to be driven aside, and he would be. No aristocrat would ever overcome the demands of change. Idaho was not through.
Are you an aristocrat, Leto?
Leto smiled. The ultimate aristocrat dies within me. And he thought, privilege becomes arrogance. Arrogance promotes injustice. The seeds of ruin blossom.
Maybe I will not attend your wedding, Idaho said. I never thought of myself as an aristocrat.
But you were. You were the aristocrat of the sword.
Paul was better, Idaho said.
Leto spoke in the voice of Muad'Dib. Because you taught me, he resumed his normal tones. The aristocrat's unspoken duty, to teach, and sometimes by horrible example. And he thought, pride of birth trails out into penury and the weaknesses of interbreeding. The way is open for pride of wealth and accomplishment. Enter the nouveau riche, riding to power as the Harkonnens did, on the backs of the ancient regime. The cycle repeated itself with such persistence that Leto felt anyone should have seen how it must be built into long-forgotten survival patterns which the species had outgrown but never lost. But no, we still carry the detritus, which I must weed out.
Is there some frontier? Idaho asked. Is there some frontier where I could go and never again be a part of this?
If there is to be any frontier, you must help me create it, Leto said. There is now no place to go where others of us cannot follow and find you.
Then you won't let me go.
Go if you wish. Others of you have tried it. I tell you there is no frontier, no place to hide. Right now, as it has been for a long, long time, humankind is like a single-celled creature bound together by a dangerous glue.
No new planets? No strange...
Oh, we grow, but we do not separate.
Because you hold us together, he accused.
I do not know if you can understand this, Duncan, but if there is a frontier, any kind of frontier, then what lies behind you cannot be more important than what lies ahead.
You're the past.
No, Moneo is the past. He is quick to raise the traditional aristocratic barriers against all frontiers. You must understand the power of those barriers. They not only enclose planets and land on those planets, they enclose ideas. They repress change.
You repress change.
He will not deviate, Leto thought. One more try. The surest sign that an aristocracy exists is the discovery of barriers against change, curtains of iron or steel or stone or of any substance which excludes the new, the different.
I know there must be a frontier somewhere, Idaho said. You're hiding it.
I hide nothing of frontiers. I want frontiers. I want surprises. They come right up against it, Leto thought. Then they refuse to enter. True to this prediction, Idaho's thoughts darted off on a new tack.
Did you really have face dancers perform at your betrothal?
Leto felt a surge of anger, followed immediately by a wry enjoyment of the fact that he could experience the emotion in such depth. He wanted to let it shout at Duncan, but that would solve nothing. The face dancers performed, he said.
Why?
I want everyone to share in my happiness. Idaho stared at him, as though just discovering a repellent insect in his drink. In a flat voice, Idaho said,
That is the most cynical thing I have ever heard an Atreides say.
But an Atreides said it.
You're deliberately trying to put me off. You're avoiding my question.
Once more into the fray, Leto thought. He said, The face dancers of the Benet Lelaks are a colony organism. Individually, they are mules. This is a choice they made for and by themselves. Leto waited, thinking. I must be patient. They have to discover it for themselves. If I say it, they will not believe. Think, Duncan. Think. After a long silence, Idaho said,
I have given you my oath. That is important to me. It is still important. I don't know what you're doing or why. I can only say I don't like what's happening. There, I've said it.
Is that why you returned from the Citadel?
Yes.
Will you go back to the Citadel now?
What other frontier is there?
Very good, Duncan.
Your anger knows even when your reason does not. Hui goes to the Citadel tonight. I will join her there tomorrow.
I want to get to know her better, Idaho said.
You will avoid her, Leto said. That is an order. Hui is not for you.
I've always known there were witches, Idaho said. Your grandmother was one.
He turned on his heel and, not asking leave, strode back the way he had come.
How like a little boy he is, Leto thought, watching the stiffness in Idaho's back. The oldest man in our universe and the youngest, both in one flesh.
The prophet is not diverted by illusions of past, present, and future. The fixity of language determines such linear distinctions. Prophets hold the key to the lock in a language. The mechanical image remains only an image to them. This is not a mechanical universe. The linear progression of events is imposed by the observer. Cause and effect? That's not it at all. The prophet utters fateful words. You glimpse a thing destined to occur. But the prophetic instant releases something of infinite portent and power. The universe undergoes a ghostly shift. Thus, the wise prophet conceals actuality behind shimmering labels. The uninitiated then believe the prophetic language is ambiguous. The listener distrusts the prophetic messenger. Instinct tells you how the utterance blunts the power of such words. The best prophets lead you up to the curtain and let you peer through for yourself. The Stolen Journals.
Leto addressed Moneo in the coldest voice he had ever used.